It is Tuesday, September the 18th, 2012. The radio program is on the air. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network coast to coast and on Sportsnet in high definition. Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. Later on the program, David Branch, president of the CHL and commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League, will be with us. We'll talk about how the lockout affects junior hockey. And after a little bit of browbeating, I suppose, mostly Brunt, Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, will indeed join us. Originally, and for a period of almost 2 hours, the Blue Jays consistently declined our request to have somebody from the organization on to discuss the UNL Escobar situation and more specifically address the suspension that was given to Escobar, a suspension lasting what we have termed a mere 3 games. Both Brunt and I believe longer, if not unlimited, would have been more appropriate. We'll address that situation with Mr. Anthopoulos in just a few minutes. But not shy of opinions on anything, not the least of which this topic, I would assume, although we haven't talked about it yet, is our own Greg Zahn. Zahnny, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Ever seen anything like this?
Well, no, not really. I would deem the John Rocker situation to be a lot more malicious and vicious. But for me, there's so many different levels to this story, so many different layers to this onion. When you look at the word maricón, there's no other translation for it than a homophobic slur that begins with an F and ends with a T.
Yep.
I'm not going to say it. I've played in Venezuela, Puerto Rico, been to Mexico. I was married to a Mexican woman who speaks Spanish, and even she would translate that to be a negative word. Any of us that have ever been in a clubhouse know that the language and the words that are used in the confines of a clubhouse, in the sanctity of a clubhouse, can get pretty nasty. It could be about as racist as you can possibly imagine. Homophobic slurs get lobbed around at each other all the time, but that's the nature of a clubhouse. It's how men talk in the confines of a clubhouse. But in public, we know those words to be unacceptable. We live in a very, very politically correct society these days. And I would go as far as to say that in the Latin American culture, he probably would get away with using words like that in public a little bit more readily because of the machismo. I may be wrong. It's been a long time since I've been to Latin America, but I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
It's still fighting words in Latin America, though, depending on how you used it.
It's a fighting word no matter where you use it. But if it's one friend to another at a poker game or, you know, driving on the freeway, you know, you're going down the road. Unfortunately, it's a word that when used in the wrong context within the wrong framework of a conversation, it could be as derogatory and as poignantly stinging as can be, and it's a word that should not be used in public conversation, let alone written on someone's face. He basically walked out there, a walking, talking billboard, and he upset an entire demographic and sexual orientation with one sentence.
He upset a lot of people, you know, like he said, beyond. The only thing I take exception to there, Greg, is the idea that it's kind of political correctness, because that sounds like it's that it's not, you know, that it's not meaningful. It's just that it's kind of a mob, you know, everybody kind of rallying to the cause thing. It's not, we don't tolerate that. You know, we don't tolerate that kind of language. There's all kinds of other comparables to do with race that we don't tolerate.
Right.
And we don't tolerate this one. And, I think that's not wrong. I think it's right that we don't tolerate it.
No, so, I think it's fine. We shouldn't tolerate that. It's totally immature. But the level of maturity or lack of maturity from this guy does not surprise me. I watch this guy play baseball on a daily basis. I see the facial expressions. I see the body language. No doubt he's talented, but he has a lot of growing up to do, as do several other young players on that ball club. It's unfortunate that something like this had happened. What's even more unfortunate was that press conference. That press conference actually made things worse for
way
me
worse.
In my own mind. It was like they were all on a different page, and they didn't have any time to prepare, yet they had a full day to prepare. And that was the best they could do. He could have taken the easy out and said, you know what, that was directed at one of my teammates. And it was clubhouse hijinks that spilled over, unfortunately, onto the field. Totally an error on my part. But when I peel back the layers, I'm thinking to myself, how did he get on the field with that written on his face? How did a teammate not understand what that word meant? Even the white guys know. Even American-speaking people know what that word means. If you played baseball long enough,
you've heard it.
You know what it means.
Yeah.
You know the first thing you learn in any language when you're learning a language is all the dirty stuff. That's how people roll. They learn all the dirty phrases first. You know what that means. And so they tell me, oh, well, you know, he wears eye black with messages on it all the time. Well, isn't that stuff you do in like high school and college? Short of I love Jesus, then I'm thinking that's just a little bit immature right there. We don't need to be writing messages on our eye black and going out there on a major league diamond.
Well, why is that even tolerated by the organization,
though? Because they created the atmosphere in this clubhouse and in this organization is consequence-free. Go ahead, play poorly for a couple of months. Don't worry about it. If your name is so-and-so and such, we'll go ahead and cut you some slack. We don't expect you to play the game properly. We don't expect you to stand up and be accountable for your mistakes. It's a consequence-free environment. If you're of a certain stature in this organization prospect-wise, you don't have to perform well because you're a prospect.
Who's the architect of that position?
You tell me.
Well, no, you tell me who do you think it is? Is this Beeston on down, Anthopoulos on down? Is it John Farrell that allows it to go on?
I think they're all responsible, in my opinion. I don't know. All I can tell you is and I have to say this, and people probably get tired of me saying it, but if I was managing this ball club, not that I'm politicking for the job, I really don't want this job. But if I was a manager of a Major League Baseball club, I would ask my players. No, I wouldn't ask them. I would demand that they act like grown men. I would demand
that the bare minimum.
They play the game like a professional. I'm not, and I probably wouldn't even expect Major League caliber performances from the guys that they have in that clubhouse right now. I think that's asking too much. But I would ask for professional caliber performances.
And, you know, Greg, I like where you're coming from on this because, you know, look, 162 game schedule, there's a lot of give and take. You can't run it like a military camp. No. It's not about yelling at guys and all of that kind of stuff. You have to treat, you know, again, the best thing I've ever heard from successful coaches and managers is that I treat people like adults and I expect them to act like adults. I treat them as though they're responsible and professional and I expect that back. But this does suggest a kind of, you know, laxity in the culture, in that clubhouse, that they just kind of let stuffs go. That, like, this whole, well, nobody noticed and nobody said anything. I guess that's possible.
Sure is.
But that doesn't that kind of, that seems to me it's September, they're out of it. No one's paying that much attention to much anything right now.
You want me to tell you how it's possible? And I'll tell you why there wasn't anything. Like, first of all, there are certain things, like, I'm fairly old school, you know, and I played for some managers who pretty well let guys do their thing and be themselves. I've had managers who said, you know what, look, you guys can wear your earrings all you want, just not on the field. Wear your uniform the proper way, blah, blah, blah. But the eye black thing with messages on it, that would have gone over one time. I would have basically said, you know what, this is the big leagues. Act like a big league ball player. Act like a grown up. The fact that it took five times for them to go get a pair of flip shades for Moises Sierra, and they actually had to show him how to use the dadgum things after he's played 7 years in professional baseball, is an absolute travesty. The fact that nobody said anything to him is a joke. The fact that it happened more than once is completely inexcusable. If I'm looking at Moises Sierra after he has messed up a fly ball in right field without the proper flip downs on, and he's standing in right field and he doesn't have them on, I'm sending the bat boy out there with a glove and saying, you know what? If you don't have enough smarts to grab a pair of flip shades and you're going to embarrass yourself and then, of course, embarrass me further by going out there and doing the same thing five times? The Brett Laurie base running situation. How many dumb mistakes on the bases is he going to be allowed to make before somebody sits him down and says, you know what, kid, maybe you should watch a few big league ball games and see how big leaguers run the bases. The fact that he was unapologetic about the way he ran the bases and the fact that his base running errors probably cost the team an opportunity to be playing with the lead in the top of the ninth. The fact that he says, this is how I've always played the game, take it or leave it. Really? See, are you going to sit? Sorry, are you going to sit by and accept that kind of nonsense? That's an immature explanation and unacceptable in my mind.
See, this can upset people on a whole other level listening to this, because it's one thing to say, okay, a guy who is, you know, either a bigot or a moron or some combination of the above did something remarkably unwise and in isolation, and the team punished him for it, and we could debate the punishment. But if you suggest that it's, you know, that it's part of a cultural issue on the team, you know, that not that, you know, they accept what he did, but that there is this kind of, you know, that this is a symptom or in some way of something else going on the team, that suggests a lot about the organization. Well, beyond one guy.
Let me just clarify my position on this, because I know that I'm going to catch an enormous amount of heat. I've picked on Brett Laurie. I've picked on the organization. So my position is this. The fact that he was able to get out of the dugout with that written on his face is ridiculous. Who's paying attention? Okay. The fact that he's out there on a major league field at all with things written on his face is ridiculous. This is the big leagues. This is grown up time. You know, this attitude like, well, you know, we just got to go out there and have fun. Well, you know what? That's a bunch of crap. You know, it's fun when you win. But this is a livelihood. This is a business. I'm sorry, but it is a business. And you're supposed to go out there and win. If you can't have fun winning, you're not in the right business. But this have fun at all costs kind of situation, this culture that they've created, doesn't fly.
Well, but again, I'm trying to pin you down here, and not because I disagree with anything you've said here. But as somebody who's been in those clubhouses, who's been in places that Brunt and I have not been, let's point a finger here. If that's going on, and I think it is the indictment to Farrell? Is it to Anthopoulos? I mean, to some level, to Beeston, to Rogers in general. But somebody has to take the bull by the horns, and it seems to me that the manager is the most responsible for this. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I'm going to cut Alex Anthopoulos a little bit of slack here, and this next comment is going to get me in all heaps of trouble, but he's not a baseball guy. He's a sabermetrician. He's a bean counter. He is the new era. This is a guy who was never a baseball player. He was never a coach, but now he's making baseball decisions.
Well, and he may be qualified to make baseball decisions.
Maybe.
But he doesn't understand the culture of the
clubhouse.
Game.
That's why I said he's not a baseball guy.
Hasn't been in there as a player when the
or
doors are
coach.
Closed. Or
no.
A coach.
Or a coach.
Right.
Exactly. So,
granted.
So that being said, and that's what I'm saying, he's not a baseball guy. So I'm cutting him some slack.
Right.
But at the same time, when you're the general manager and you don't like the way things are, you say something to the manager, and whether or not he agrees with you, that's where debate happens. You know, that's where a manager and a GM are sitting in the office with the door closed, and the general manager is telling the manager, I don't like the way things are being done around here. I don't like the culture of this ball club. Do you have anything to say about that? Is this your doing? Are you as upset with the culture of this clubhouse as I am? Do you feel like you cannot go to these players and say, this behavior, this kind of attitude is unacceptable without hurting people? Are you afraid to hurt people's feelings? Are you afraid to bench a player for poor performance? A repeated mental error. What is the culture that we're creating in this clubhouse?
Right.
Because I understand that in the beginning of the season, and even, you know, spring training, maybe into the first 6 weeks of the season, you want good players to push the envelope. You want them to test their limits to see how far they can go.
Sure.
But that's not what I've been watching this year. What I've been watching is guys making idiot mistakes making the third out at third base, running to third base on a ball that's hit in front of them, trying to do things that they can't do in bad situations, not looking at the game situation and playing according to the game, and then using the excuse of consequence-free environment. There's no leash on us when we're out here on the ball field doing all kinds of stuff that doesn't make any sense from a baseball standpoint and has never made any sense from a baseball standpoint. It's why the rules are what they are. You know, in this situation, you do this. In this situation, you do that. The game's been played that way for 120 years, and it's proven to be effective. And yet they are using these excuses of, well, we don't really want to stifle the development of these players. BS. Give me a break.
Well, okay, if you did any of these things that you've discussed,
oh,
the base running mistakes by Lori, the sunglass thing with Sierra, now this, which is in a different context, but nonetheless, isn't the finger got to go at the manager here? Isn't he? He's the guy who's in there with these guys on the plane, around the hotel, in the clubhouse, in the dugout. He's the guy with his finger on the trigger as to the lineup and who plays and who doesn't.
You know what? I can't argue with that. I have to say, yeah, you're right. It starts there, but then it has to be backed up by the next level and the next level. And so when I look at the situation, all I can say is I know the guys I played for. I know Davey Johnson would not have. In fact, I got sent down.
Well, that's not surprising,
though. I got sent down from.
We all saw you play.
I got sent down from the big leagues to back to AAA for repeated mental errors. My second year in the big leagues, they basically.
Were you guilty?
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
I didn't make the same mistakes again coming back.
Yeah.
I would have never in a million years thought to go and kick the hornet's nest that was Jim Leland or Davey Johnson or even Johnny Oates, who was one of the most laid-back guys. But he demanded a certain amount of professionalism. Those managers had consequence-filled atmosphere in their clubhouse. They let the veterans police it. But when you did something stupid, you did it one time, a coach would get in your, I mean, they weren't afraid to get in your backside or in your face and really let you know this is not the way it's done.
Right.
But you didn't make the same mistake again because you knew that you were either going to lose your job or get sent out. You'd be put on the bench or sent out.
Aren't you guys a little surprised? I don't know John Farrell really well, but I've sat here with him on several occasions. I quite like him. He seems a nice enough guy. The jury's still out on whether he's a good manager or not, I think, but I think that's with most people. And that's not to condemn him. I just, circumstances being what they are. I would have thought he would have been a kick-ass manager.
Well, you can't evaluate John Farrell. You can't evaluate his managerial skills as far as the X's and O's go of being a manager because of the personnel situation that he's dealt
with. No, I get that, but
Let me finish.
Okay.
Okay? But you can evaluate the climate, the culture that's created. It starts at the manager. That's where it starts.
Aren't you surprised that this is going on?
Not really.
No. Oh, you think he's a laissez-faire guy?
No. I think they got too many young players on the team, and the generation of player that is in that clubhouse right now, minus a couple of guys, they don't care.
How do you think they react? And so that leads, how do you think the other players react to what just happened here? Do they shrug, or are they mad at the guy, or do they stand behind him?
No, they're cringing right now, and they're probably behind their back saying, what an idiot. That's probably what they're saying. But at the end of the day, they don't really care about what it's done to the team. They're more worried about themselves. They're more worried about their own performance. They're trying to get ready to go out there and beat the Yankees. And the thing about baseball is it goes on every day. And no matter what, when you're a part of a team, you have a job to do. And baseball is the weirdest sport in the world. It's a team sport that's made up of 9 individual acts. And you know what? It's such a tough game that a lot of times you do have to focus on what it is that you have to do. Yeah, our idiot shortstop's being an idiot again. So, okay, you shrug your shoulders and you're thinking to yourself, maybe privately you're thinking, when are they going to get rid of this guy? But you still got to go out there and do your job.
Yeah. Last question before we go. I'm on record as saying, if I was the general manager or the person encumbered with making the decision on the future of Yunel Escobar, he would have put on a Blue Jay uniform for the final time.
I agree with you 100%. Based on a couple of things.
Okay.
His play, his inconsistency at the plate, his overall lack of what's the word I'm looking for? Well, I'll just say, you know what, consistency. He's been a very, very inconsistent offensive player. And you know what? They gave him every opportunity to shirk the moniker that he came from Atlanta with. He kept himself together long enough to get paid, and now he's right back to acting like the problem child. He's basically fulfilling all of the whatever the word I'm looking for. I'm struggling today. He's become exactly what everybody said he was when he came here from Atlanta.
Brunt, would you boot him out? Would he have played his last game for the Blue Jays?
Well, which view do you want? The kind of the idealistic view or the cynical view? But the cynical view would be I'd send him home for the rest of the year because the year is lost anyway, and I'd try to get something for him. But I'm not sure what he's worth. I don't know that they're going to, he's got a good contract. Keep hearing that. Good owner-friendly contract.
Yeah, he crushed his trade value.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, I think you got
whatever it was.
This is all about the message. And the message has nothing to do with what you get in return for Yunel Escobar.
Well, the 3-day suspension by the Blue Jays is sending a message of, hey, consequence-free environment. Here's a little slap on the wrist.
There's a little slap on the wrist.
Yep.
The bare minimum. The general manager, Alex Anthopoulos, will indeed join us. Thanks, Sonny. See you soon, pal. Greg's on. We'll come back with more. Primetime will continue on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
MMA, the biggest, meanest contact sport on the planet. A heart-pounding, bone-crunching battle where one five-minute round can seem like a lifetime and where a small mistake can lead to a huge upset. From the first weigh-in to the final victory, Bodog is there. More than just a name, Bodog has been a trusted online brand for over 15 years. Bodog.net, your source for MMA odds and free poker. Join Bodog today.
Minutes past the hour. Primetime continues for this Tuesday the 18th on the Fan Radio Network, coast to coast, and on Sportsnet. McCown and Brunt in our Toronto studios. Earlier today, when the story broke of the Escobar suspension and then subsequently having listened to and observed the news conference, we made a request to have somebody from the Blue Jays come on and discuss this situation. That request did not fall on deaf ears, but the Blue Jays made it clear that our request was being denied. I think that was the exact terminology.
I believe that's right.
For whatever reason, the position has changed somewhat, and so we are pleased that the general manager of the Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos, is joining us now. Alex, this is a bit of a rough one because it would seem not to be many that believe that a 3-game suspension of Yunel Escobar is either sufficient or appropriate punishment. I want to give you an opportunity to substantiate, justify, say whatever you want to say about that.
Sure. No, and I understand. And in terms of availability and so on, obviously, as you can imagine, it's been a chaotic day, to say the least. I know I don't get the request, but I know our media department gets a ton, and they're the ones that set up press conferences, take all the press, do all those things, and they felt as though because there was so many requests and with the game tonight and the timing of everything and everything that needs to be done even afterwards, that to be fair to everybody, rather than try to pick and choose and do 5 of the 40 that were asked or 80 or whatever it was, that just for today we address everybody at the press conference, let everybody ask their questions, and that would end up being it. And again, always they're the ones that handle this stuff, and they're the media guys, and we work with them. But with the game being shut down, we're going to try to get to everybody, and obviously it starts with me, and we'll work through them all, the interviews, all the requests, and all those kind of things. So I don't want to, you know, I know I can go on and talk, but I can certainly walk through the chain of events if that works for you. But also, I know there's a lot to ask, so if I don't want to chew up a lot of airtime if I'm taking away a chance for you to ask me things, so I can work through the chain of events if that works for you.
Alex, yeah, well, let's start with that. When did you get the news, and what were the questions you asked when you got the news?
Yeah, it was last night. God, I would probably say maybe 6 o'clock or so. I got an email about it from our AGM, and you don't know what to think. Just, you know, you get the photo, and immediately my first thought is, you know, you're zooming in. Did someone fool around on the internet and write something like that? You know, you just don't know what was going on. And obviously, I looked to my wife and I just said, look, I have to get to New York. I was planning on flying to New York today, but obviously scrambling to try to get on a last flight. So I knew I needed to get here, ask some questions, get to the bottom of it. I was obviously alarmed right out of the chute. So I was able to get the last flight out at 9, got in here last night. Throughout the process, we had, Paul was traveling to Washington, D.C., and, trying to get a hold of him, trying to get a hold of Yanel as well. Also, we need to be in contact with the league with things like this, because obviously it goes beyond the Toronto Blue Jays. Obviously, the league is very involved in this. The Players Association is very involved in this. So, ultimately, the league had told us that, you know, we really can't do anything. I mean, I thought about reacting immediately last night, because it's not something that, you know, I wanted to try to get to New York, get to the bottom of it, and react one way or the other. But the league advised us that that's not the way we go about handling something like this. They have experience doing these things. So we needed to have a meeting at the commissioner's office today, which we did with the Players Association and Yanel. There was a lengthy interview process conducted. Really everybody was involved. The commissioner was involved. Certainly Paul was involved. The PA was certainly involved, and we were all there. So it was a pretty lengthy period of time. A lot of things were discussed. A lot of things went through, and ultimately it was decided this was the course of action everyone was going to take. And also with the involvement of groups like You Can Play and GLAAD, and I know the commissioner's office had been on the phone with them quite a bit as well and working with them. And ultimately realizing no matter what the result was going to be, you're not going to satisfy everybody. People, you could release the player. You could suspend the player for a million games. You can fine them like Kobe Bryant was fined and not suspended. You're never going to satisfy everybody. I think what ultimately came out of it, and I think what I took from it more than anything else, is what's the ultimate problem here? And the problem is not necessarily the specific event, but what the event was about and what it signified and what it says about sports, and beyond that, what it says about society. And, you know, this is a time, I guess, to get on my high horse, because it's something that this is clearly something that goes beyond all of that. And in being involved with those groups, both GLAAD and You Can Play, it wasn't about suspensions, fines. It was about getting the word out there, the education process, and can you now be used? Can this event be used to educate, whether it's athletes, whether it's anybody in day-to-day life, about what goes on and the fact that this still remains a problem? It hasn't gone away, and it's not going away. It may get better slowly, but it's not. And I think ultimately that was the tack that everyone felt was the best, and specifically both of those groups felt very strongly about that's what they needed and wanted to see done, and that's what they felt the benefit, if there could be one, from something so horrible as this could come from. So it's not an easy event for anybody, and that's not to make excuses, but I think at the end of the day is how can we move forward from this, and how can we try to help solve the problem?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things I want to say here in response to that. Here's what I will tell you, that we spent the first hour of this program today on the phones, or I did, discussing this. I know you are in New York, so you don't know what my position on this is, but I think you gave him the bare minimum. I'm not satisfied with this suspension. I do not want to see this player in a Toronto Blue Jay uniform ever again. I do not want him representing the city of Toronto ever again. And anything less than that, I think, will be insufficient. If that sounds harsh, that's fine. But this is not a casual comment. This was a thought-about, pre-planned decision by Yunel Escobar to do this. He had the opportunity to think about it, to execute it, to change his mind if he wanted to, and he chose not to. I don't buy, and I don't think anybody buys for a second, the BS he was spewing at his news conference today about he didn't mean to offend anybody. He meant to get that message out and to offend somebody. Was it a group or an individual? Who cares? But even if he didn't mean to do it, he did it anyway. Alex, if you did that under the terms of your contract and relationship under the employ of Rogers, you'd be dismissed. And so would I, and so would Brunt. And frankly, I don't understand why this guy right now is still a member of the Toronto Blue Jays.
And that's fair. Like you said, it's your opinion, and it's fair. And I don't doubt that you're not alone with that. And the same way, I'm sure there's some other people that feel a lot of other ways about it. It was determined, and again, it's not for me to debate, by a lot of people involved in this, that was not the intent. Again, that's not even coming close to trying to rationalize or condone this. It's just what was ultimately determined. So I guess I would say, with that being said, if that was the determination, and also with all the parties involved, it was, how is this, what can we do to tackle a larger problem? Because whatever happens to Yunel Escobar going forward, does that address the issue that's going on in sports, that's going on in life right now? And obviously that would be a discussion that we'd have too many hours to be on your show to talk about. But I think that's ultimately what the decision came down to. So,
but Alex, sorry, it's great that this could be turned into a public service announcement, and that's a good thing. It's a positive, but I think what people want to know is how that adds up to 3 games out of 162. Like what the calculation is.
Can I ask a question here that's sure. Really, really specific? Did you make this decision on 3 games, or were you told to suspend him for 3 games?
I think all of this was done collectively. The suspension comes from the team, but again, this was done collectively with a lot of people involved. And I can tell you that names that were brought up at the time, Roger McDowell, the coach with the Atlanta Braves, had an incident where he had 14 games. I know there was obviously an incident with Delmon Young early in the year where he had 7 games. And obviously, you know, and I don't know exactly the pattern, but it seems like everything was half of that, depending on the severity or what they felt the intent was and so on. They went down to 3. I know obviously Ozzie Guillen had some problems in the past as well. I know all those things came up. I know there was other examples in sports like Kobe Bryant that were brought up as well. And I think that was part of the equation. But again, I don't think it was done by one specific person. I think it was done collectively as a group. The league is very involved in this, as they should be, because it goes beyond our club. It impacts the league as well.
But the Blue Jays are empowered. You are empowered to, if you are mandated to give him a 3-game suspension, you are empowered with the privilege and the right to decide that this guy will never put on a Blue Jay uniform again. Whether you have to pay him for the last 12 games or whatever it is of the season and act beyond that, you have that power independent of what the league or the Players Association or anybody else had to say.
Correct.
Are you
any player at any time?
Correct.
Pay him? Absolutely.
Right.
We have that right. No one can stop us from doing that.
Right.
You can release anybody. Same way you can get released, I can get released.
Exactly.
We decided not to make that determination. And ultimately, I think what it comes down to is,
oh, are you there?
Okay. Yeah, hello?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay. I know ultimately you said you don't believe it, you don't care what he says, and ultimately for me to debate you on that, I'm not going to get anywhere going there. But I think what...
Oh, we lost him. See if we can get him back.
Yeah, I think we should finish this.
We would like to finish the conversation. We'll take the commercial break. We'll see if we can get Alex back and whether he will give us a couple more minutes. To try and conclude this conversation. It's 20 before the hour. We'll take the break. Keep your fingers crossed. We'll try and resume with Alex Anthopoulos when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
MMA, the biggest, meanest contact sport on the planet. A heart-pounding, bone-crunching battle where 1 5-minute round can seem like a lifetime and where a small mistake can lead to a huge upset. From the first weigh-in to the final victory, Bodog is there. More than just a name, Bodog has been a trusted online brand for over 15 years. Bodog.net, your source for NNA odds and free poker. Join Bodog today.
Coming up to 12 minutes before the hour, McCown and Brunt in our Toronto studios. A frustrating day has become more frustrating.
Yes, indeed.
It started with the frustration of a three-game suspension to UNL Escobar, which is hard to even... I mean, I don't even know where to go with that. And then we were being denied access to Alex Anthopoulos, and then all of a sudden now we're being allowed to talk to Alex Anthopoulos, and then in the middle of the conversation his phone cacks out or somebody pulled a plug or something because he had to go talk to somebody else. So now apparently he's talking to somebody else and may come back to us in the next 2 minutes, but I wouldn't hold my breath, Brent.
No, I think that may be the end of our conversation with Alex for today.
Well, you had another question to ask him.
The question I would ask, and you know, especially when we're throwing around comparables that are 7-game suspensions and 14-game suspensions, and we can talk about other things in other sports, etc., is that I still don't quite understand. I want to understand in the minds of the people who made this decision, so mostly in the mind of Alex Anthopoulos, but there are other people involved, what's the mitigating factor here? You know, are you saying that UNL Escobar didn't know what he was doing, or that he didn't understand what the word meant, or that he didn't understand somehow, you know, you have to right. be a moron if he didn't think it would upset somebody. And as you said, when you write that on your face, well, again, when you write that on your face as though people do that, you know, you do it to offend somebody. You're trying to insult somebody. You're trying to use that language to insult somebody or to provoke somebody. That's why you do it. So what's the mitigating factor here? That he's a good guy or that he's a good shortstop or... You know, you want to have him around? I don't understand what gets him that little bit of extra grace here. Because 3 games doesn't seem to jibe not just with what we might feel emotionally right now or what people might think, but it doesn't jibe with the other suspensions we're talking about. We hadn't gotten down to 3 yet, you know, when we're talking about other suspensions for similar, although nothing like this where a guy made himself into a billboard with an offensive phrase wearing the uniform of his team. It is not heat of the moment. It's not something he said in a bar. It's not something he yelled at an umpire. It's something he wrote on himself wearing your uniform on TV in a stadium, in your stadium. It's kind of clear cut.
And what I'm unclear on is who actually made the decision on the 3-game suspension. And Alex, correct me if I'm wrong in this assessment, but based on what he said to us, it seems as if this was not an Alex Anthopoulos decision, not a Toronto Blue Jays decision, but somehow a consensus decision between the Blue Jays, the Players Association, and the Office of the Commissioner.
Yep.
Somehow.
That's sort of what it sounded like, yes. That would be a follow-up. But
which is why I think the last question I asked him was, are you then, or would you acknowledge that you are still empowered to suspend this guy beyond the 3 games? As an act of the Blue Jays, independent from everybody else, with the understanding you may have to pay him, but you don't want him in a Blue Jay uniform. And the only thing I remember Alex saying is, yeah, we have that right, but not indicating that he had any interest in doing so.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be very intriguing over the next few days to see the public response to this.
I do, too. Because, you know, the difference here, Bob, you know, we talk about, you know, we had Zani in here talk about making base running errors or running through a stop sign or being selfish on the field or whatever. This is an issue of kind of community tolerance, right? This is about you're doing business in this community and there are accepted standards of behavior in this community. And maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe people are just going to say, oh, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong about what the community will accept or not accept here.
Right.
But, you know, the reaction to me suggests today that this is something that people don't accept as part of their community. And these guys are doing business here. They're selling tickets here. There is a bond and a relationship between a franchise and its fan base. People have to kind of commit to you. It's not like going out and buying a bag of potato chips, right? There's a commitment, an emotional relationship. So if you better read that community properly. You better understand what people believe and what they think and, act accordingly. That's who you're responsible to. You know, even in the most cynical, if you want to boil it down to dollars and cents, you're selling people stuff. You know, and you're trying to sell them a product. And if they don't like you, or if they think that somehow you, betray the kind of values that they espouse, then they're not going to want to buy that stuff anymore. So that's the tricky business here. This is not about – Alex is right in one sense talking about it being – you know, it's we can talk about this as about awareness and again, turn it into one big public service announcement. That's lovely. But, you know, these guys are in the business of selling tickets and getting eyeballs on TV and, you know, reaching out to the people out there who – and again, if they're not offended by this or if they think three games is fine – then they'll be fine with this. And I'm sure that it won't affect their relationship at all with the franchise, but it's a touchy thing.
Well, and it's a small sample size, but we took phone calls between 4 and 5. And look, I do understand that when I take a very strong view on something, there aren't too many people who are willing to come on the telephone and challenge me on it. And I get that. So I know that I'm going to have more supporters voice their views than I'm going to have detractors. So there's no scientific basis for anything that was said between 4 and 5, except that there was a unanimity that there's something goofy about this decision. Since then, emails, Twitter, et cetera, are showing very strongly that most Blue Jay fans are on side with the notion that they don't want to see Yunel Escobar represent them, the city of Toronto, and certainly the Toronto Blue Jays, any further. It's by no means 100%. There are those that think three games is fine and Yunel Escobar is my shortstop and I want him to continue to be my shortstop. So there's no science yet. There's a small sample size. But as the next few days progress and you hear and see more and more about this, we'll get a better idea of how Toronto and Canada, for that matter, are reacting to Yunel Escobar. Our apologies to David Branch, who will join us on another day, we hope. Our thanks to Alex Anthopoulos and to Greg Zahn for joining us on the show tonight. For Brunt, McCowan, see you tomorrow.